What's happening, everybody? You're now tuning into the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight, and I have another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented and diverse guitarist who has released his own guitar instrumental CD, along with an instructional book for beginner and seasoned guitarists titled Guitar Smarties in the Beginning. His unique style of playing and experience has positioned him to be the go-to guy for mentoring and teaching up-and-coming and seasoned guitarists. Please put your hands together and welcome guitarist and composer, Jazz Miller. How's it going, Jazz?
It's going really well, Spud. Thank you so much for having me on the show. This is great.
Oh, man, it's truly an honor, Jazz, man. I mean, you come from such a diverse musical background, and, you know, it's just my priority to have you on my show, man. Thank you.
Oh, well, thanks again. My pleasure. How do we get this party started?
Oh, man, you know, first thing I want to talk about is, you know, how when you started as a guitarist, Jazz, I mean, you're coming from a teaching school of Berklee Music, and you've been working with them and doing your own thing with the instruction books and putting out your own instrumental CD, man. Just kind of give me a history of how when this journey started for you.
You know, I started playing when I was 9. You know, both my parents played music. My father was a, you know, big band sax and clarinet player in his teens, you know, back in the Glenn Miller era, you know, Benny Goodman, that kind of thing. You know, he was playing that kind of stuff. This was in New England. He grew up in Connecticut. Came south and, you know, married a Southern belle, you know, being a Connecticut Yankee, you know, which was my mother from the Shenandoah Valley in Virginia.
Wow.
And she was a piano teacher, and then, you know, she had majored in piano and voice at Mary Baldwin College there in Stanton. And, you know, like I say, I had a bunch of students, so I started teaching when I was 12 just because she, you know, got me students. You know, so I remember that year like it was yesteryear or something. You know, I had 4 students to start with. There was one guy who was about 40, one kid who was about 6, and 2 kids that were my age. And, you know, that's when it began. And, you know, Hendrix was rocking the house back in that day.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's probably my greatest inspiration. You know, I can remember my first 45s. One was Hey There, Little Red Riding Hood. And the other one was Wild Thing by the Trog that, you know, Hendrix later covered,
sure.
Of course.
Man, you know, Hendrix was amazing to me, man. My first introduction to Hendrix, believe it or not, was Machine Gun. And
sure. Okay.
You know, I was about, yeah, man. I mean, I was about 7 years old at the time, but, you know, that's really what inspired me to be a guitarist and, you know, pick and learn the guitar, man. It was just amazing what he was doing with the distortion, his licks, just everything overall was just amazing.
And his control of feedback, you know, because he was really playing, you know, through overpowered Marshalls. And in those days, too, you know, amps just weren't as homogenized as they are now. There just wasn't as much control, you know, by virtue of the electronics. And you know, Jimmy just really had that together. It was his imagination that just really, you know, inspired a generation, certainly. Yeah, you know, I remember reading in Downbeat magazine they referred to him as the Jazz Connection, you know, just because he was using, you know, sharp 9 chords and all kinds of different harmony and going through key changes and just doing some really avant-garde things that other players just weren't doing.
Yeah, definitely. You know, Jazz, you know, I talked earlier regarding your new unique style of playing, and you know, we were kind of talking about the different tunings that you use on your guitars. You know, give me some examples of, you know, how and when you would use these specific tunings on your guitar.
Yeah, sure. I appreciate that. You know, coming from the Shenandoah Valley, is sort of a natural thing to sort of listen to a little bit of folk music as well, even bluegrass, that kind of thing. And that's no stranger to European guitar players as well. Of course, I was a big Jimmy Page and Led Zeppelin fan also. And, you know, Page was real into bluegrass and that kind of thing. So, you know, of course, you know, listening to things like Black Mountainside off Zeppelin 1, which is, you know, a dadgad tuning, DADGBE, all that. You know, through to even Bron Uriah, you know, which is an open C tuning. That's CACGCE. I've never seen that tuning anywhere else, but I would have to say it's probably Page and even Leo Kottke and even Dwayne Allman. Of course, who played, you know, slide. And so if you're going to play an open tuning, I think he used, well, actually on Little Martha, which I did cover on the Relax CD, which is now available on iTunes and CD Baby and Amazon and, you know, all the standard outlets. You know, if you're, it's a pretty typical tuning to use for slides. So it kind of makes sense that if you're going to have your guitar tuned to that, that you might even finger pick as well and explore that. And he did. And, you know, Kottke also covered Little Martha. It's a great tune. So, you know, not to be left out in the cold, I had to do it too.
Definitely, man. I mean, it's, you know, I'm a huge fan of playing covers and just really get into the minds of the composers. You know, really seeing where they were going from a creative point musically, man. And it's just really good that we get the opportunity to tap into their creative side of their compositions. I really take advantage of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're all a product of our influences. There's nothing new under the sun, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, even, you know, Hendrix, of course, was a huge fan of Bob Dylan.
Oh, yeah.
His mentor. And, you know, Page and Zeppelin were, you know, huge fans of Willie Dixon. You know, Zeppelin 1 was half Willie Dixon tunes.
Wow.
You know that, so yeah, so sure, got to do it.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, I want to talk about. Well, you know, I want to ask you, man, about your CD titled "Relax." Man, you have excellent acoustic works on there. I mean, there's so many cool fingering and dynamics I'm hearing on the frets, man. It's just phenomenal the way you play with all the remakes and the classics that you really added your own flair to a lot of them. Because some of the stuff I knew from other recordings that other artists done, and man, you really nailed it on a lot of them.
Oh, thank you very much for the compliments, Bud. That was something I really endeavored to do. You know, of course, you know, when I first started playing, my standard mode of operation really was to copy note for note and be as authentic and faithful as I possibly could be. You know, especially as a teacher and that kind of thing, you sort of want to purvey accurate history, I guess, as it were. But then, of course, when it came time to do my own thing, I thought, well, you know, it only kind of makes sense that I would speak with my own voice. So I, you know, certainly endeavored to do that. Appreciate you noticing that. You know, when I did that, the word that sort of ricochets through my cranium is rubato, you know, which I had the opportunity to do that because I was playing by myself, really, so I didn't have to stay with a drummer and, you know, stay with a band so we could all be, you know, a tight unit and that sort of thing. So it was my intention. Really, it was kind of twofold. Actually, I played those pieces to begin with. I learned them because I loved them. And then, of course, because I was teaching them, I recorded them really so I'd have something for my students to be able to emulate. Plus, those tunes just really worked well at weddings, and it was my intent also to give them something to be able to go make some money with as well, to go play weddings, you know, and that kind of thing.
Sure.
You know, so after I, you know, kind of had the material in the can, as it were, you know, it just kind of struck me that there were really kind of two markets for it, really, being, you know, for students and then also for, you know, the romance crowd to, you know, relax and set the mood and, you know, enjoy your baby.
And there's a lot of virtuosity going within that CD, let me tell you. I mean, it sounds like just two or three acoustic guys playing at the same time, man.
Oh, Spud, you're a gentleman and a scholar. I appreciate it.
But, you know, Jazz, you know, I want to, you know, back up a little bit, man. I mean, you come from a very diverse background of playing. I mean, aside from acoustic guitar, you've also dampled and played around with the Chapman stick. Is that correct?
I have. You know, I'm not playing it so much these days, but I will say I probably spent a good 20 years noodling around with one. Generally speaking, for me, well, another little piece of my background, I suppose, back in another day, I used to be in this progressive rock group based out of Columbus, Ohio, called Panorama. With a gentleman by the name of Mark Richards who played drums and percussion. He was one of the first guys to have a drum cage, along with Neil Peart in Rush, that kind of thing. In any event, when we were doing that, of course, it was our interest and mission to explore what was new and different out there. And I had seen you know, the first ad in Guitar Player magazine way back in 1974 for Emmett Chapman's stick, and it just blew my mind. You know, 10 strings at that time. Now there's a 12-string version out, but you've got, you know, 5 and 6 bass strings and then 5 or 6 melody strings, and you tap and hold independently, two hands independently like a piano player. But your hands are still in direct contact with the string, so you can slide and bend and hammer on and pull off and do all the inflection things that a string player does. So, just an amazing invention. So, of course, yeah, I just had to have one. I finally got one, went to my first NAMM in 1979 and then bought one from him there in 1980. And used it really kind of primarily. In Panorama, I was sort of the multi-instrumentalist, the utility guy. So I played, you know, guitar and bass pedals, Taurus pedals, you know, the Moog Taurus pedals, and also stick and some keyboards. I was the second keyboard player, Neil Andrews, and then later Craig Markley were our keyboard players in that group. But how I used the stick in the band then, of course, was primarily as bass, and then I could also comp with the right hand just to add another texture. You know, the melody strings kind of sound to me, when you play them clean, sort of like a clavinet D6, slightly removed. And then, of course, the bass strings just have their own sound because you're tapping and holding. It's such an amazing instrument. It really causes you to think in different directions, partially because of the tuning. You know, you've got this low string in the middle of the neck, and then from the center on the bass strings, they go low to high outwardly, and then the melody strings are low to high from the center out in the other direction. So it's just quite a thing. I mean, you can check it out at stick.com. There's a word for Emmett and company. And, it's definitely quite a community, the stick community, that is. I have to say, I love playing it. Not doing so much anymore. It's, you know, you definitely have to you have to dedicate a lot of time to learn this new tuning and instrument. But I will say that also helped me to become really interested in different tunings.
Sure.
Yeah, I have to confess, Spud, too, that there's a certain amount of laziness that's involved in doing that, just because when you tune the guitar, when you tune the guitar differently, you've got all this new stuff to play and to enjoy without having to, you know, employ quite so many finger gymnastics to get to these new and different chords.
You know what I think is cool, too, man? It's how we're able to translate our skill set from one instrument to another. You know, different variations of the tuning, man. But, you know, being a guitar player and a bass player, I'm pretty sure a lot of the attacks and licks that you would play would translate well on the Chapman stick, you know, in certain...
Oh, sure. Well, sure. Primarily on the melody strings, because they're tuned in fourths like a guitar. You know, bass being tuned in fifths and being upside down presents a few more challenges. You kind of have to think a little bit differently, but fifths are inverted fourths, so it's not that much of a stretch. And in fact, the same shapes still work. The same scale patterns still work. It just sort of kind of bends your mind sideways a little bit, because if you start on the low string, on the string that's closest to your head, it's actually the highest bass string. And then when you cross strings, and you've got do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. But as you cross the strings, you've got basically do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. You know.
Oh, sure.
Because
And
so it just kind of breaks your mind a little bit. But, I have to say, it really causes you to stretch your mind. That it does.
Yeah, I mean, because like I say, I play a little guitar, and I'm used to the tunings of the E, A, D, G, B, E. And, you know, just to have that change is like, man, that's just going to throw my whole feel of playing, you know.
Yeah, you know, I'm sad to say too, the stick wasn't at NAMM this past year, and they haven't been for a couple of years, I think, just because Emmett's, you know, 70, I think, you know, so I know he was there, but they're just not maintaining a booth anymore, so doesn't have near the presence. It's kind of harder to get a hold of one than ever. I think you can still do so on eBay, but you know.
Sure. You know, speaking of NAMM, I want to talk about your endorsement deal with Graphite Guitars. And, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about the Graphite Guitars and, you know, how the construction of it and how the sound of it. And, you know, give me some details and, you know, the way they designed this specific guitar and the tone of it and how have you used it on stage and some of your other compositions.
Sure. You're talking about the Range Song Graphite Guitar. Rangesong.com, and another word from our sponsor, you know, and there's a graphite stick, of course, available as well. And I will say the graphite and polycarbonate stick, my first stick was serial number 704, and then the second one was 1832, which was a polycarbonate resin stick, not actually graphite. Emmett is now doing a graphite stick in recent years. And the advantage, of course, is it's a denser material. It's denser than wood, so it has a higher sympathetic vibration resonant frequency. And what that translates into is better sustain, better bass response, better treble response. Sustain, of course, because the body just doesn't absorb the physical energy of a vibrating string. So it vibrates longer, you know, so it's just a superior material, I think, really, for, you know, modern, especially electric instruments. The Rain Song graphite guitar, I just, you know, I went to NAMM in 95 and just kind of stumbled across, you know, Dr. Decker on the stick booth way down in Hall E. Actually, I think it was in Hall D at the time. Now they're in E. In any event, you know, the whole, they just looked so striking, so it blew my mind, of course, so I had to stop and play one. His unique patent, you know, because there are lots of graphite instruments out there that have, you know, hand polycarbonate sides and backs. Ovation, I think, was probably one of the first that was doing that. But Dr. Decker's unique patent is he's got a graphite top. You know, and what they were doing was taking graphite and extruding it to a strand, basically, and then laying these strands of graphite into an epoxy to emulate wood grain. So basically what you've got is, yeah, you've got this, you know, indestructible pseudo wood grain. And the situation, as you know, he basically described it to me, was he was in Hawaii, 65, had retired from aerospace, and you know, was a fan of classical guitar, and went, had weddings that he went to, and was continually seeing the guitarist run for cover at the outbreak of a cloudburst, and thought to himself that he could solve that problem. So he set about to do precisely that. And, you know, what ensued was the Rain Song graphite guitar. And it is an amazing instrument, that it is. Nice. It's now his son-in-law, Ashwin Kumar, who's running the show. And, yeah, I have to say, I shot an instructional video a number of years back where it was my mission really then to use the Rain Song in it acoustically and not plug it in. Of course, its forte is the fact that it's an electric instrument, and because of how it's constructed and because of the, you know, graphite top and all those sorts of things, I mean, you can paddle your canoe to shore with the thing, pull it out, and it'll tune up with a tuner.
Wow.
You know, and so, of course, with touring musicians, you know, you're traveling in and out of cold and hot climates and all that sort of thing, you can throw your guitar in a truck, and the finish won't crack and those kinds of things. You know, it's just roadworthy.
Sure.
You know, that's the issue. But I have to say, you know, for my video, I played it acoustically with a microphone. And, yeah, it sounded phenomenal. I mean, we're talking about vibrating graphite, you know. It's, yeah, I was amazed.
That's just amazing to me, the engineering and, you know, just the creative minds behind putting a graphite guitar together. I mean, that's... You know, I'm used to the wood. You know, wood is just kind of like the standard tradition of any guitar, you know, bass or, you know, electric string. I mean, it's wood's the way to go. But, you know, now.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I will, you know, we just went to Guitar Center yesterday, as a matter of fact, and we're kind of noodling about playing a bunch of different guitars. And that's sort of the issue with wood. You know, not all makes and models are created equally, they're not the same. You know, you've got to find that piece of wood that brings it all together for you and utilize that instrument, right? Because, you know, it's so variable, you know, but yeah, and also susceptible to warpage and all those things, and, you know, response to moisture and, you know, getting dried out and just all that stuff that,
right,
you just don't have problems with graphite.
You know, Jazz, with all the experience and records that you've composed and played on and your touring and performance, you put out a book, Guitar Smarties, in the beginning. You know, what was the mission behind this book and what really inspired you to put this together? Because there's tons of guitar books that are out there, you know, for up-and-coming guitars or maybe somebody who sees and just looking for specific chops to add to their arsenal. How is the book designed? How is it going to benefit everybody out there that either they're starting out or they're at a intermediate stage in the game right now?
Oh, sure. Well, you know, I started really writing it in 1978, actually. And at that time, really, I just write things down in a notebook for my students. And then it occurred to me that I should be, you know, doing something with that. Plus the fact that, you know, they would lose their materials and would need me to rewrite things for them. At that point in time, I was hard pressed to find the materials that I really wanted to show students. What it was that I wanted to show them really was an efficient and effective way to get from point A to point B and get them playing as quickly as possible, so they'd have, you know, a great experience with the instrument and not give up because they were able to get somewhere. And for me, I've just always kind of been a theory head, and, you know, it's always been my mission to apply music theory to the instrument, to empower a player to compose and improvise and write. You know, of course, I'd see, especially with my piano students, so many players that couldn't play a note if you took their music away.
Sure.
And to me, that was just no fun.
Right.
You know, I wanted to be able to pick up, you know, I wanted to have some cerebral therapy out of the deal, you know, to be able to pick up a guitar and just relax once again and lose myself in music and massage my brain.
Yeah.
So that's kind of part of it. Now, that being said, I have to also, again, pay homage where homage is due, and that is in 74 and 76, I took these guitar seminars, these tremendous guitar seminars put on by a guy by the name of Howard Roberts, who's kind of one of the co-founders at Musicians Institute. This is before MI and GIT existed.
Sure.
GIT happened in 78, and, you know, this is 74, 76, when, you know, I went to Howard's seminars. And he was really the guy who was taking music theory and applying it to the fretboard and really kind of demystifying and decoding the whole process for guitar players. So, you know, again, we're a product of our influences, and on the education side of things, it's Howard Roberts for me, that's for sure.
Wow. It's amazing, yeah. Though, man. I mean, because I think everyone who reads, you know, books, I mean, everyone's looking to be great overnight sometimes, you know what I mean? But I think a lot of times, you know, when you're starting out, you know, we lack the vision of having a good solid foundation as a player and really being versatile as a musician, you know, so we can play with other groups, you know, maybe outside of our typical genre, but, you know, just having those chops from other avenues of music really helps, you know, down the road.
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, versatility is key, not only professionally, but also variety is the spice of life, as they say.
Yeah, definitely.
I have to say that's one of the things that's made me just fall in love with the guitar, too, is that there are just so many ways to play it and so many styles of music, of course, as well. I mean, you know, you can finger pick, you can play single string technique. Of course, there are chordal things. There's chord melody, there's slide guitar, finger pick with metal picks like a banjo player would or without. All of that. I mean, yeah, guitar is a pretty cool instrument. That it is.
It is. It is, man. And it's a definitely needed instrument in any composition sometimes, you know, to really bring out if it's the rhythm track or if it's just, you know, adding a little bit more warmth to the song, you know, with the chords and things, you know, you can't go without it sometimes.
There's, you know, the only thing that perhaps supersedes a string for me, really, there's a lot to be said for, you know, a breath through a reed instrument. But of course, you know, the voice for me is the pinnacle, really. But, you know, there's a lot to be said for that expression, that sense of expression, and, you know, being able to bend and slur and have vibrato and do those kinds of things, which, of course, a stringed instrument, along with other instruments, affords.
Sure.
Yep.
You know, Jazz, we're in 2011, man, and we got a new year started, and, you know, the musical agenda is probably filled to the max on your agenda, man. You know, give me some new projects that are upcoming from you, and, you know, what's up and coming for you in the near future?
Yeah, well, you know, this is what's kind of funny. You know, I started really as a classic rock guy back when it was current, you know,
yeah.
And moved from there into progressive rock. You know, when I went to school, did some coursework with Berkeley, did the Howard Roberts thing, also went to the University of Oklahoma as a comp theory major, on and on. That really moved my attention to the jazzier sides of things. You know, I mean, there's nothing like learning some music theory to sort of pull you into that, because that's where it lives.
Yeah.
You know, in jazz and classical. And so I've really been certainly a fan of jazz most of my playing life, you know, certainly since my late teens and early 20s. And, You know, but of late, I've really kind of found myself doing this sort of folksy finger-picking, you know, acoustic guitar thing, just because it was simpler for me to do. You know, I didn't have to be dependent on, you know, other people to be available, really. Mm-hmm. You know, so partially for no other reason other than self-defense, you know, I just needed to be able to make a living without having to depend on somebody else.
Sure.
And so now, I'm thrilled to have an opportunity to kind of get back to what I really love, and that is, you know, do something, you know, contemporary and jazzy once again. Spud, I have to say, if I can, too, I'm checking out your music, especially your theme for your show. Man, I just love your stuff.
Oh, thank you, man.
Absolutely. I mean, you kind of blended hip-hop with jazz and all of that. I mean, it's all going on in what you're doing.
You know, I'm trying to really bring all of my influences together, you know, being a fan of hip-hop and being a fan of R&B and definitely being a huge fan of smooth jazz. You know, I just felt that I could really express myself as a musician if I brought all those elements together and still having the ability to, you know, impress my peers with my playing ability too. You know, with pop and R&B, sometimes we can really get ourselves in a box and the compositions get really predictable at times. But with jazz, I was able to be free and really take it to another level. So yeah, thank you.
My pleasure. I love it. That's great stuff. You know, and speaking of smooth jazz, once again, I have to say, you know, it's kind of worried me a little bit, you know, as we have been talking about, seeing these stations change format. You know, guys like Brian Culverson, of course, are saving the station up there, the smooth jazz station in Chicago, you know, him taking over the morning show, all that kind of thing. Although guys like Bernie Scott and the American Smooth Jazz Awards that happened in Chicago this past Halloween. This is the very first year for the American Smooth Jazz Awards. The Canadian Smooth Jazz Awards, of course, have been happening for a while, and you know, you're up there in that neck of the woods. You're probably more familiar with it than me, but I'm thrilled to see and hear that contemporary jazz seems to be really alive and well.
Like I say, music never dies, and as long as we keep things melodic and, you know, establishing a foundation and keep the compositions popping, I think we won't have an issue.
Well, you know, I say, you know, for me, just in my mind, I guess how I kind of think of it anyway is sort of music school music, you know, from back in the day, finally having made it to radio. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah, so, totally.
Yeah, so kind of my point is the genre was existed long before it had a bin at the record store and a spot on the dial.
Right.
You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think you nailed it on the head, too. It's the melody and the music and the groove and all that stuff that makes us love it in the first place.
Oh, totally, man. You know, just to, you know, get input and feedback of my music, you know, I'm always open, man. I really do appreciate it. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. Absolutely. Well, you know, kind of speaking about compositional things, too, it makes me think of, you know, I read the biography on the Beatles, you know, where basically, you know, George and Paul were talking about, or I should say John and Paul and George, too, were talking about, and Ringo, can't forget him, you know, they were called the Beatles because what really made it happen was, as Peter White once told me, the Mercy Beat that was occurring in and around London at that time. And what they were always looking for in writing the next song was what was the next beat going to be. Not the melody, not the chords, not the lyrics, but the beat, sure. You know, the groove.
Yeah.
And I guess that's why we think contemporary jazz is so groovy.
It is, man. I mean, as soon as the song comes on, it's catchy. I mean, you just gravitate to it. You know, you become a fan. And I still remain a fan of all my musicians out there, man. These guys are just doing great works and, you know, they're really displaying what it means to be a really great musician. So, yeah.
Yeah, truly.
Well, Jazz, it's been excellent, man. I just really want to thank you for coming on the show and, you know, taking your time to chop it up with me, man, and, you know, bringing your experience to the Producers Corner, man. I really appreciate it.
Spud, the pleasure has been all mine. This is such a great show. You're such a great guy. Thank you so much for having me on. I've absolutely loved it.
Sounds good, Jazz. Well, man, you have a safe 2011, man, and we'll definitely keep in touch.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Stay warm up there and come visit out here in Southern California.
Oh, man, I'll be back, man. I just came back from NAMM, and, man,
I know you did.
Oh, man, I got to make another trip out there, man. It was excellent.
We'll have to hang.
We'll definitely will.
Excellent. Pleasure, my friend.
Bye. And a big shout out to Jazz Miller for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. Man, he's just a talented musician. I had to talk to him. Again, comes from a very diverse background as a guitar player. I mean, really just knows his craft as a musician. So it was just a bonus to get his perspective and share his music journey on the Producer's Corner. And for more information on Jazz, you can hit his website up at www.jazzmiller.com. And that's JASMILLER.com. www.jazzmiller.com. And for my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.spud2tight.com. Again, www.spud2tight.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone, an iPod, a Mac, or a PC, open up your iTunes player, go to the iTunes store, and type in the Producer's Corner, click on my image, and you'll have a list of my past and current interviews as well. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. And for the remainder of the show, I'm going to let the track that's playing in the background close out the show. And it's by Jazz Miller. And the title of the track is called Live With Me. And again, I want to thank everybody for tuning in and listening in. Until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace. Thank you.